today, and again about 2 weeks ago, we hit 3,000 in record margin calls, which tells you how stupid, or let's say dumb, we'll call it dumb money. That means that all those people had a chance to get out in the bounce and the rally we had all summer, held on to their bad, crappy positions, and they were forced to sell them when the market came back to 3,000. Somehow, the market sets up levels that are lines in the sand. I was really surprised. I didn't think we'd see the level of margin calls and the level of pain that we hit when Nasdaq hit 3,000 2 weeks ago. The other thing, and I say this at the start of every program I've done ever since March, because I did one just 2 weeks before the top, is look around you and consider your age. Consider your age. The average age of people who are interested in trading, who are surviving in trading, are not 20 years old. They're not 30 years old. For the most part, they're not even 40 years old anymore. Those are the folks who have been washed out. The people who have been washed out are the ones who got out of college, had a lot of belief in the internet. They're single. Some were living at home. They were able to save a lot of money because they had that $60,000 a year software job or engineering job. They built up their kitty. They believed in the new economy. They put their money in when every time there was a dip, they held on or they bought some more. Finally, that last time after March 10th, the market dipped and it didn't. It kept dipping and kept dipping and kept dipping. Guess what? They're waiting for it to bounce. The market has a real perverse sense of humor. If you take a look at the action between about March 10th and the end of April, usually when you get a decline, you get a few little waves. It'll go down a little bit, bounce up, go down a little bit. No. We had this tremendous rally and it just kept going like this, just squeezing people by the throat until the pain got so great that we started getting to some real intense volatility in April and May. Guess who got hurt the most? My nephew, who had a whole bunch of internet stocks, who works for Lucent Technology, a great company right now. Those are the people who've been squeezed out of the markets. When I talked in February, I talked in front of 700 people in New York, and these were the smartest people you ever met. They couldn't be taught anything. They were so smart. The average age, and I don't want to get into an age thing here, but it is. There's an age aspect to the market thing. The average age in that room was probably about 30 years old, 25 to 30 years old. These folks knew their momentum trades. They knew their momentum trades. They're very, very arrogant. It was a very odd day for me back then. That was, I think, the 23rd or 24th of February. Being in that environment, seeing the way the momentum market had created greed in all these people and seeing that peak of greed and knowing, yeah, if you're around in the markets for a number of years, yeah, the top's coming here. Privately, and maybe it's a bad thing to say, privately, I was hoping some of these people would get hurt just the same way you want to spank a child for being bad. Now, I didn't know they'd get hurt that bad, and that's kind of hurt us all. Again, this is pre-topic material, right? I'm surprised. I don't want them to get hurt so bad because there's a real liquidity problem in the market now. There's not enough money willing to come in and join the institutions who are sitting there with all this cash at the end of October to really give us something interesting the way we've had in the past years. We're moving to this real heavy liquidity time of year, and I'm thinking, okay, here we have all that mutual fund money getting ready to put back to work. Are the traders going to join them? Are the investors going to join them? Is there anybody out there anymore? An experience like this weekend, very, very similar to what's going on in the stock boards, similar to what's going on in a lot of websites, not mine, I want you to know that, but a lot of websites, chat rooms attendance, and people are paying for their newsletters, and people are paying for this or that financial service. A lot of that contraction going on. A lot of the talk among the vendors and exhibitors is this the end? Is this a sign of the bottom, or is this the beginning? I'm not sure I know the answer to that. I'm just like anybody else. If somebody asks me, okay, where's the market going next? I'm going, I don't know, because we're right in between finding out. I could tell you, I think maybe Nasdaq's going to $3,600 or $3,700. After that, I don't know. Maybe it goes to $2,000. I don't know. Okay, that's my little thing at the beginning. I just had to say it because it's very interesting to me to come to these programs and see what happens and see what the environment is and see how much excitement there is, see how much pain there is. Mastering the tools, can I ask, does anybody or how many folks have any idea who I am or Hard Right Edge? Have you spent any time at my website, or is this a completely new group? Completely new. Okay. All right. I wish I could start at the beginning. I only have an hour and 15 minutes, and I hate doing very, very basic stuff. Are there folks here fairly new in the markets? You guys have some experience? You ladies have some experience? Because It tends to be that more people after a program like this say, I talked over their heads, then gave them something too basic. Now, if you get frustrated because I can't give you a background for some of this stuff, please go over to the website. It's primarily a free website, so the knowledge won't cost you any money if you go over there to get the basic stuff. And I do have, I guess we're giving away a free online trading course. I'm not here to push anything. There's about 130 pages of free material at the site, most of which I've written. Let me do the five-minute thing about my point of view on technical analysis so that these two old things make some sense to you in context. I work with a concept called pattern cycles, which I've talked about before. I'm a pattern analyst. My point of view is patterns in the market. I'm much more interested in patterns than I am in indicators. I'm a discretionary trader. Linda Raschke is my hero. Heroine, excuse me. If you know who Linda Raschke is, Linda Raschke uses both sides of her brain in trading. And I believe you have to use both sides of your brain in trading. One side's the intuitive side. Be able to look at a pattern and understand, is that bullish, is that bearish, without necessarily fitting it into a textbook description. Oh, that's a triangle. That's a head and shoulders. That's a flag. You look at it and you go, people are buying. Or you look at it and you go, it looks like it's going to roll over and sell. It looks like a top. The intuitive side of the brain. The other side of the brain, the scientific side of the brain, taking that intuition and forcing it through filters because we all lie to ourselves. Using those filters, which are the technical indicators, to go and say, wait a second, it looks bullish to me, but when I pull up this set of other tools, everything's telling me the exact opposite. Now, everything works. Everything in the market works off of price, time, and volume. All indicators work off of price, time, and volume. That's not completely true. There's two types of indicators. There's indicators we use every day that we want to throw underneath our price charts. Price, time, and volume indicators, you know? Indicators, the mathematics are based on combinations of price bars set to certain moving averages and periods of time, or their volume derivations, they're looking at accumulation or distribution, this kind of thing. That's what we work with. And for the most part, that's all that indicators are about, price, time, and volume. You've got those broader indicators. You've got what the big boys use, what the John Murphys of the world use and the big houses use. You've got these macro sentiment indicators, a big flow of funds. Are mutual funds growing or shrinking? Those big, broad indicators that define sort of the overall market. But for day-to-day in the markets, for us to make money, we have to deal with price, time, and volume. That's about it. This is a volume indicator. I hate to start in the middle. I don't want to go past you. There's going to be a lot of things like Fibonacci in here and a lot of things like market numbers. And it's hard to, you could do 2 hours on Fibonacci, and maybe some of you went to see Joe's thing or some of the other people talk about Fibonacci. I use a lot of these types of tools in my trading very instinctively, but a lot of folks just can't get their hands around them. Now, the group is small enough, you're welcome to, if it doesn't get out of hand, you're welcome to raise your hand and stop me if you get confused, okay? I really appreciate it, too, because I tend to just go, and there may not be any end to that once I start. You've got the top pane of the chart, you've got the bottom pane of the chart. Indicators, we tend to think of them as being in the lower pane. That's the information below the price chart that sort of tracks the price bars themselves and gives us information as to whether the price bars are telling us the truth or lying to us. I mean, that's basically it. Can we trust what our eyes see? Indicators on the bottom half of the price chart suggest to us whether or not it's truth or whether or not it's falsehood. We'll also be looking at indicators that sit on top of the price chart. Now, there's a big difference between indicators that sit on top of price as opposed to indicators that sit below price. Now, the most obvious example of an indicator sitting on top of price is a moving average. Moving average, and there's plenty of illustrations as we go along. Once you place an indicator on top of a price bar, you have a pattern in addition to the information of each individual segment. You really see this when we look at some Bollinger Bands. Bollinger Bands, which are standard deviation bands that wrap around price bars, create patterns. They create patterns that add their own sort of element of bullishness or bearishness to it. So things that look like they're going to go up or things that look like they're going to go down, things that look like they're at resistance or that look like they're at support. The indicators that are on the top half, and again, this one is just a pure price bar on top, give you an additional set of information to what's below. One of the biggest problems, going back to to Linda's thing about the intuitive mind, you're looking at the price bars. Now, you have to take your eyes away and drop them down to look at the indicator. It forces a little bit of a skip in your brain. You have to look at them separately and try to make the comparison. The comparison between the price bars and the indicator is a concept that's called convergence and divergence. Convergence and divergence means that either two things are coming together or two things are in conflict with each other. And just about everything when it comes, when you're talking about price bars and indicators has to do with convergence and divergence. In fact, going back to Linda Raschke again, I'd love dropping her name because she's so brilliant. Somebody asked her how she trades. Does she trade with a lot of indicators? And she says, no. All an indicator really is looking at one piece of price as opposed to another piece of price and whether or not they're converging or diverging with each other. If a price bar is at 60, it's at 70 one day, and it's 72 the next day, well, it's moving away from 60. The simplest form of technical analysis, of technical indicators, is comparing two prices to each other, or comparing two bits of information to each other. And all that indicators do is compare themselves, converge with, or diverge from price. I have a point of view on indicators, and some of you folks may go home to your TradeStation terminals tonight and do a ton of back testing, throw in a ton of mathematics, try to find out what the market did over the last gazillion sessions and come out with what it's going to do tomorrow. I believe that technical indicators exist to support the price pattern, not the other way around. Technical indicators exist to support the price pattern. You start with price, price tells you something, you drop back to the indicators, find out whether the indicators converge with, support what you think you're seeing about price, or diverge with, say something different about what price is going to do. And we're really talking about price prediction. We're talking about price direction, where we think price is going to go. Just for any of you who don't know, this is just an OBV. It's called an unbalanced volume. It's the classic volume or accumulation distribution indicator. OBV tracks how volume follows price around. And it's just there's not that many volume tools. You know what the best volume indicator is in the world? Absolutely the best volume indicator. Those little bars right under price. There's nothing like them. Those things are just magnificent. Now, the funny thing is some software does these little bars. I'm talking about those little volume histograms that shows you how many people traded each day or each bar. Some of these folks actually deal with those things in black and white. I think some old versions of Metastock, you couldn't get these things in color. To me, that tells you just a tremendous amount of information. If you have a green bar, that means people are buying. If you have a red bar, that means people are selling. And, it isn't the individual bar that's giving you information. It's the trends that you're seeing in the volume change, much better than any accumulation distribution indicator. But, you can't just throw out the tools just yet. Going back to the idea of patterns, many indicators create patterns on their own. One of the points of this illustration is how OBV creates head and shoulders patterns. And it's something that's fairly widely known. It's not a big secret. But all those patterns that you read about in books and all those patterns you see in websites, indicators do the same thing. And if you can read the patterns, read the action on the indicators themselves, it helps you support a trade. And it helps you stand back from a trade. And we'll have some examples of that. I think we've already started to talk about that. Convergence, divergence. The end of now, if you called the end of the Qualcomm rally and you were short when the Qualcomm rally started, when the Qualcomm rally ended, you'd be making a lot of money. Now, genius that I am, I could look back and find a great example of this. But when it actually happens, it's amazing how you'll just deny the truth to yourself. This is just a real... real simple. Oh, this is ADX. It's an ADX indicator, which is a trending type indicator. It drew a real clear trend line up here. The trend line broke right at that point. Now, here's the Qualcomm rally going back late last year. There's another trend line being drawn under Qualcomm. If you notice where that arrow is, Qualcomm didn't break that trending indicator yet. At the day that ADX broke down, and pointed down and broke that trend line, Qualcomm was still well above its trend line. And a lot of people, this is probably about 7 bars after that prediction that Qualcomm was going to go to 1,000. I don't know if you remember that. It was about the 28th or 29th of December. Well, here we are 7 bars later with the ADX saying that the rally was over. That's a divergence. That's all you need to know about a divergence. You have one trend line broken and one that's being held intact. Which one do you believe? It's tough. Most times, you want to, if you're getting divergent information on a technical indicator, you want to stop what you're doing and believe the indicator. But, and here's the part that sort of messes with your brain, the smarter you get at pattern analysis, the more you can ignore your indicators. You know, you can trade on pure patterns. You can't trade on pure indicators. Just try to, just get rid of the price bar. And just when something goes to oversold, buy it. And watch what happens. See if you make money. But you know what a pattern breakout looks like. You know when support is taken out. You know when resistance is taken out. You know, the pattern has to come first. Let's talk about some individual pattern tools, because this is about tools, right? I don't want to bore you with pure trend lines. Trend lines are so passe because, well, they don't work anymore. Have you ever noticed? You ever try to trade off a trend line? You just get absolutely crushed because everybody knows where the trend lines are. You know, the scary inside professional, market makers, specialists, whatever you want to call them, other traders, really, when things come to classic support and resistance points these days, they never hold. There's always going to be a shakeout because they know, and this is another point of view that really comes from the website and my way of trading, the case for technical analysis these days is to trade against it because everybody knows more about TA now than they ever have in the history of technical analysis, and you can thank the World Wide Web for that. It's so easy to learn all about trend lines and patterns and indicators and everything else, and to read about all the classic rules about what you're supposed to do when there's a breakout, what you're supposed to do when a trend line breaks. Everybody knows what those rules, and common knowledge is the curse of the trader. What everybody knows closes the system inefficiency that allows you to take money from the market. System inefficiency, I don't want to make you crazy. System inefficiency is, you've heard about inefficient markets. TA used to be a great way to look at inefficient markets because there weren't a lot of people doing it. When John Murphy was doing this thing in the 1970s, it was a very small little clique of voodoo artists. You know, TA didn't have any respectability back then, so it was an extremely powerful tool. You know, if John or technical analysts of his day saw a head and shoulders back then, well, not everybody in the world saw the head and shoulders, and Maria Bartiromo wasn't talking about the head and shoulders, and every trader clicking their button seeing that head and shoulders. Common knowledge is closing that inefficiency so that the outcomes of these patterns is very, very different than it has been in the past. Much more undependable behavior and much more counterintuitive trading. You know, we'll talk a little bit about pattern failure, but very often the best trade is exactly the opposite direction of the one that you believe it to be because of your knowledge of technical trading. So, you know, I don't want to talk about pure trend lines, but these are about parallel price channels. Parallel price channels are harder to mess around with than trend lines are. They're much more stable. I don't know why they're more stable, but they are more stable. Now, don't let this intimidate you, because the parallel price channels just start from two points at either end, at either extreme, that have to be parallel to each other. You got two lines, 4 points that form a parallel. One of the great mysteries of parallel price channels is they form these things called harmonics. They form these mini channels within their boundaries. Now, if you're a swing trader, if you're holding positions 2, 3, 4 bars, these harmonics are very, very great tools for you to find hidden support and resistance in the market. Hidden support and resistance gives you the opportunity to get in and out without all those other people who see the same thing that you do. And that's an advantage in the market. That gives you an edge in the market. Now, looking at a parallel price channel, it looks like a real complicated thing, but they are, from my personal investigation and my personal belief, more common than trend lines. You see them every day. You have to train your eyes to pick them out. You have to train your eyes to pick them out. That's one of the problems. You know, if I pulled that off, and, you know, unfortunately it's just a static slide, so I can't pull it off, many of you wouldn't see the parallel price channel that was sitting there. It becomes a training of your eyes to be able to do it. Also, it depends on what kind of software you have. Do you have a cloning tool on your software so that you can draw two lines, then you clone that line and you sort of move it around to see if it fits in its boundaries. Another aspect of parallel price channels is newer traders tend to use arithmetic charts. Many parallel price channels appear on logarithmic charts. Now, definitions, I don't want to get crazy about it, because many of you know what log charts are versus arithmetic, but some of you might not. One has to do with price change and one has to do with percentage change. The way most folks are taught, if you go to big charts or you turn on your charting tool, your Q charts, your RealTick, whatever, you probably set it to arithmetic and forget it. But one of the skills in being a trader is being able to choose wisely between arithmetic and log charts, logarithmic charts. It's a trading skill to do that. And sometimes you have to have a little switch that switches back and forth because one type, and is there anybody who doesn't know what I'm talking about? Feel free to raise your hand. You have to spend a little bit of time with it. If price goes from 10 to 20, and then it goes from 20 to 30, in an arithmetic chart, there'll be equal distances. It'll go from 10 to 20, 20 to 30. In a logarithmic chart, when something goes from 10 to 20, it's doubled in price. The distance will double. When something goes from 20 to 30, it's only going up 50%, so it only goes halfway. And so it tends to scrunch as prices go up. It's a great tool if you're working with low-priced stocks, especially because a lot of these things, try it on CMGI and look at how CMGI looks different, any of that stock looks different from the days when it went from $3 to when it went to $150. A logarithmic chart picks up a lot of that. Now, getting back again, the parallel price channels and any trend line will form either on a logarithmic chart or arithmetic chart, but it can't form on both at the same time. And if you're looking the wrong place, you may not see a trend line. If you're looking the right place, you may see a trend line that other people don't see. So what good are trend lines? And we were talking about thinking counterintuitively here. One of the best trend line trades, and one of the best trades in general, is when the market first does what you expect it to do, in this case, breaks a trend line, and then jumps back up across that line. Now, let's try to use this broker. This is the Adobe rally, and if you're familiar with the Adobe rally, it was a monster. But let's look at how a trend line breaks and what happens when it jumps back across the line. It's very, very typical price action, not only for a trend line, but classic things like any support resistance that gets broken and then jumps back above, a Fibonacci retracement that gets taken out and jumps back above. The perverse way NASDAQ works is NASDAQ almost always takes out a prior low just to make you think it's been violated. And then at the end of the day, what did the Dow do below 10,000? Remember, it gapped down after the IBM news. It opened up at like 9,600. Everybody's looking at 10,000 as a support level. Where did it end up by the end of the day? Above 10,000. The market has this perverse way of taking out support and then jumping back across that line. Most people are just thankful they don't lose money in that situation if they hold on. But the act of a trend line breaking and then reforming is a trading signal. It's a trading signal because the market can only usually burn you in one direction. And if a trend line gets taken out and price pops back above it, that's taking out the supply or the demand underneath that trend line, which brings in the mechanics that helps the market move in the other direction. Now, it's a counterintuitive thinking, but you know, if you're not going to think counterintuitively, you're going to join all those other folks earlier this year, eventually, who got washed out of the markets. The markets in the future are going to be very counterintuitive. Our markets are going to become more and more like the futures pits, the equities markets. And if you look at, you folks look at an S&P E-mini contract on the chart, and it looks like a porcupine. It looks, you got these little hairs coming out in both directions because there's so many false moves going out in both directions. Every time there's a breakout, it gets pulled back. Every time it violates something, it gets pulled back. That you almost have to trade it in a range of prices. You can't trade it based on any individual value. Two things. Three things that go together in my mind. Gaps, Fibonacci, and Elliott Wave. This isn't a class on Elliott Wave. I can't get around Elliott Wave because it's so much part of how I see patterns. Elliott Wave's a pattern tool. It's a pattern tool. You don't have to make yourself crazy. I know there are pure Elliott Wave people out there. I'm a seat-of-the-pants Elliott Wave person, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with being a seat-of-the-pants Elliott person. All that means is You recognize it when you see it. Fibonacci, Elliott wave, and the gaps themselves, this is classic stuff from Edwards and McGee's Technical Analysis of Stock Trends, written in 1948, which is sort of the classic basic book on patterns and pattern analysis, and pure technical analysis before it got bombarded with technical indicators. Three types of gaps are commonly recognized. A breakaway gap, when something comes out, in this case, comes out of a downtrend, breaks out of a base. That's the first gap early in a trend. The second gap is the continuation gap, which generally appears halfway through the trend. That's the runaway move. Sometimes they call it the runaway gap. That's when excitement gets so great that price just can't stand it. It's got to pop forward. And finally, the exhaustion gap, which is usually on the highest volume in the trend, where there's so much excitement, so many people come into the market at the same time that it completely wipes out demand in that direction. Because it's taken everybody who wants to buy that stock, everybody who wanted to buy SanDisk at 76 bought it. There was nobody left. So all that the market can do at that point is fall from its own weight. This is also Elliott wave. This is a first wave, a second wave, a third wave, a little fourth wave, and the fifth wave. Primary moves have, in Elliott, have three thrusts to them and two pullbacks. Pullbacks have two thrusts and one pullback. And I'll show you. I've got a couple more pictures of it. You can't do Elliott wave in 5 minutes. And it's cruel to bring it up. But, you know, anything you do in an hour and 15 minutes, all it can be is a basis for some further investigation on your part. This is also, if you notice, I put a Fibonacci grid in. Have any of you spent any time with Fibonacci this weekend with any of the other folks? Joe DiNapoli is probably one of the leading Fibonacci experts in the country. Maybe he is the leading Fibonacci expert in the country. Joe's brilliant. But I'm a seat-of-the-pants Fibonacci person, too. You can make yourself crazy about Fibonacci. Fibonacci, let me give you the definition that you won't read in the books. You'll read in science books. You won't read in financial books. Fibonacci is proportion in nature. For some reason, crowd behavior acts according to mathematical principles. Crowd behavior acts according to mathematical principles. The emotional crowd acts according to mathematical principles. Going back to Linda Rashke, left brain, right brain, the intuitive side, the mathematics side. Somehow, emotion creates mathematics. Don't ask me to explain it. It's nature. The thing about Fibonacci is a force of nature. It's something you see in seashells and rose petals and any arcs that's used in design. For the purposes of traders, there are many Fibonacci ratios. All you really have to deal with is what you see right up here, which is the 38, 50%, and 62% levels, sort of this congestive area right in the middle, and how trends tend to pull back either to the 38%. This move from which started, say, down to 42, ended at 79. You expect it to pull back to that maybe 66 or 60 or 56 before it gets its act together and shifts into another, at least a test of that 76 and comes back. Now, you can use Fibonacci for a lot of things, but part of the pattern landscape is the ability to read the signs, it's almost just like this Native American thing of, you know, you want to look at the fingerprints, you want to look at the tracks, you want to look at the scat. And what you're looking at is all the past battles that took place. Now I'm talking about, let me bring it down to earth because I'll get way out of here. The trend's over. I'm not a momentum trader. I guess I got to get that out of the way. What's swing trading? Swing trading is trying to find single direct moves in the market. My best trades come after the rallies are over. That doesn't mean I'm shorting. That's not what I'm talking about. Here's the rally. We'll call that the rally. That's pretty obvious, right? My best trades come when it starts, when I could read very closely the mathematical motion of those pullbacks and pick off reversal points that other people aren't seeing. Use the details, sort of the debris of all these gaps, all these little congestive areas, to understand where people are going to come in and reverse the market. And I'm not looking, okay, boy, I want to buy 60 and then I want to hold it to 120. No, I'd rather buy 60 and get out at 62 or get out at 63, but be able to do that with a high percentage of the time. I want my percentage of winning trades to be high. I'm not interested in making a fortune on any individual trade. So I need a high percentage win. when you're dealing and trading within the debris. That's what it is. This is all debris here. We got a bunch of winners and losers up in here. That's what I love about patterns. We have a bunch of winners and losers up in here that when price returns, price has memory. It has memory. There's somebody who bought. Oh, maybe they bought that top of that gap right at 62. When price comes back to 62, that's what they're watching. That's human nature. They don't want to be losers. And somehow this creates a mechanic for how reversals take place. And I have some, believe me, I have more illustrations about it. The three types of gaps, you know, they appear everywhere. They appear every day. We don't always see them. If you notice, I use only candlesticks. Do any folks in this room use candlesticks exclusively? You know, you go back 10, 15 years ago, you couldn't find them on charting programs. But now, why do candlesticks work so much better than price bars, in my opinion? You know, some people are real hooked on price bars. Why do candlesticks work so much better than price bars? I've got two reasons. Number one, a single bar gives you the ability to see two different time frames. A single candle lets you see two different time frames. You're seeing what took place within that bar, but you're also seeing the price action within that bar. Now, does that make any sense? Or let me. Now, if we have it here, and this is actually two different time frames, so I'll show it to you as an example. But you're not only seeing where the thing opened and where the thing closed, but you're seeing some of the price action that took place within that bar. A classic candlestick, a doji candlestick. It opens and closes at the same price, but there's a whole lot of action in between. That could be flagging a primary reversal in the time frame below the one you're looking at. And you're looking at that reversal, but other people are just seeing that bar. That's reason number one. The other reason is how it gives up its secrets. Take a look how, on the left I have a 60-minute chart of Texas Instruments, on the right is a daily chart of Texas Instruments. Now, part of being able to deal with any pattern is being able to see in three dimensions. If you're trading in a fairly short time frame, basically anything under a week, if you're only using one chart to make your decisions, you're making a very grave error. You can't time yourself within the market with a single chart in that time frame. You know, you're buying from mutual funds. Even your mutual fund returns will be better if you use more than one chart, but you can live without them. If you're swing trading, if you're timing a very short time frame, you have to be able to look at the market in more than one time frame chart because trends are independent. Trends are independent, and you're looking for convergence and alignment between trends in order to make decisions. If any of you read Trading for a Living by Alexander Elder, one of the classic trading books, he talks about a process called triple screen. Triple screen is timing your trades to the three different trends in the market. Basically, one below where you're holding. You see a chart and you go, boy, there's something to do on this. There's an opportunity here. Timing the trade, looking above that time frame to see where the support and resistance is, looking below that time frame to time your entry and exit in the market. Now, realistically, what does that mean? If you're a day trader, on a 5-minute chart, you see a triangle, you see a breakout point. You go up to the 60-minute chart to see where the breakout point's going to go, has a chance to go, what kind of barriers are standing in the way if price breaks out. Or you're looking below the breakout point to see what your risk is if the market turns on you. Then you drop down to a 1-minute chart and you go, let me find a pullback on the 1-minute chart to get in. You use the chart below your time frame of interest for execution. Now, it's not about day trading. Mutual fund holders. Let's create an example for mutual fund holders. You're actually trading off a weekly chart. Okay? You're looking weekly. Procter & Gamble, that's not a mutual fund. A sector fund is on a weekly chart, looks like it's going up on a mutual fund. You look at your monthly chart to see how it's performed over years, over the course of the last few years, how long the trend's been in place. You drop down to a daily chart to find a pullback in the market to get in at the best timing. You become a market timer with your mutual fund. You're using the three-dimensional aspect of the market. Now, in terms of pure vision, notice how there's a gap over here. There's a gap on the 60-minute chart. It's our exhaustion gap. But if you weren't using candles to bring the discussion all the way back to zero, if you weren't using candles, all you would see on the daily chart is that sort of, I guess, a spinning top kind of thing. You would have missed the exhaustion gap in that move because you weren't looking at more than one time frame. Now, It doesn't take a lot, and I think candlestick traders know this, it doesn't take a lot to see hidden gaps with candlesticks. Hidden gaps are one of the tools that we can use to find support and resistance that other folks may not see. The point of that being, going back to whatever everybody else can see isn't going to help you. You want to see stuff that not everybody's seeing because that gives you an edge or an advantage in the market. The market's filled with hidden gaps. And it's so funny because the gaps don't line up. And if you ever played with just sort of simple gap theory, a continuation gap in one time frame could be an exhaustion gap in another. And rather than drive you crazy, it sort of helps you understand sort of this wave flow within the market. This is real practical. Let's bring it down to one of my favorite trades. And this is a trade, and this is something you see all the time, very high reward trade. One that you probably can make money on if you have the courage, because believe me, your stomach's going to turn when you take this trade. And it's going to turn very badly. But this is a continuation gap right here. The first pullback into the continuation gap almost never gets filled on the first try. It used to be that price wouldn't even penetrate. See how far price penetrated down in this long candle? It used to be that price would hold that. Couldn't get any further than that. But perhaps because of common knowledge, these gaps, and because there's a certain psychology, the gaps have to get filled, you know? I still to this day don't know who said that or why, but the gaps get filled. But if you're able to pick a gap like this out of the market, you could buy down until that point the gap is filled, and it's a low-risk trade. It's actually a low-risk trade as long as you understand your volume, you know how to read your volume, that there isn't a lot of volume on that move down there. And 9 times out of 10, and I don't have the volume bars under here, and you see this trade in all time frames, the volume on this big climaxy thing won't really be substantially higher than any of this other stuff. You won't see that support's been broken in terms of looking at the volume and seeing a lot of sellers. It's a very, very common trade, and one that folks don't really know, but it's actually a fairly low-risk trade, which makes it kind of scary because it's a tough trade to take because the market's moving on you really, really fast. And you know, going back to the other thing that we're talking about, me working in this sort of debris area, going back while the market's coming back down and finding those points where the charting landscape, I call them trend mirrors, which means whatever's happening here, you can look back this way and take a peek and see what's happening in the market. See the type of price action. Price has memory. Price often repeats. Certain things in the landscape will stop price from falling. That's the last thing about gaps, and this is about morning gap downs and when you can buy them and when you can't. Morning gap downs, you make a tremendous amount of money if you do right. Now, I don't know how many folks are day traders or intraday traders who get into that kind of thing. I do it sometimes. I'm not a big morning trader. I like to avoid the morning and trade the afternoon because I know everybody else likes to trade the morning, so I like to trade the afternoon just to be sort of like contrary about it. But under the right conditions, you can buy a morning gap down with a fairly high probability of understanding that thing's going to close and move in the other direction. It takes an understanding, and this is supposed to be about technical analysis, but it takes an understanding of the psychology of the market as well. You have to have a strong market to do it in, or you have to have a very strong market or a very weak market, really, but nothing in between. Maybe we should say you have to have extreme conditions. Now, many of us watch the gaps every morning. Many of us watch how the markets move every morning. This particular gap down on Oracle took place in extreme conditions. I don't remember what all the circumstances were. It was about the 26th of April. It was during one of those times where we're getting close to a bottom in the market. But the second point being that, so you missed the gap down. You didn't buy it at 69 when the market opened. There's two other little pieces of information you have to work with. One of them is looking back at the last intermediate high before the sell-off, which is up here on this chart about 75. Yeah, first the gap getting filled, okay? The market's getting a little bit stronger. That's telling you the market's getting stronger. This little V here, and it is a little bit of a V bottom, creates what I call a first rise situation. The first time a market is able to recover 100% of a prior sell-off in its time frame, within the same time frame, is a sign of a bottom. The first time that the market falls and retraces 100% of the last rally leg is a failure, the first sign of a top in the market. Now, how do you see these things? Think of them in terms of pyramids. You'll pick them up visually in terms of pyramids. It'll look like a triangle when it's up here, and it'll look like an upside-down triangle when it's down there. This looks like a little upside-down triangle. Now, what your job is once you see it, if you're not trading it, is to look for the first pullback. You know, we often want to be right away, and we think we've missed the trade because we didn't catch a breakout or something, but better trades come on pullbacks than they do on breakouts. Because you're being fed that stock by people who think they're wrong. You're being fed that stock when the demand is really against you so that you can get filled if you're working on a real-time screen with absolutely no problems, because there's going to be plenty of size to hand that stock to you, because they're all trying to sell when you're trying to buy. And it's funny, if you were in here for Rogan's program, it's so funny, and he sort of said it too. Usually if you're trying to do on a level 2 screen what everybody else is trying to do, you're probably doing the wrong thing. Pullbacks are a perfect example of that. You want to be buying when other people are selling and selling when other people are buying to consistently make money in the market. There I am being counterintuitive again, but you really want to do that. And the best thing about that too is you have much less slippage, because you're going to be there saying, give it to me, you know, give me that stock. Or one of the best times to sell are during runaway rallies. You sell above the market. You know, you put your order out there, people are real excited. Now, why would you sell in a runaway market? Because you're going to be using the pattern landscape and picking out those points where you know there's going to be resistance. You're selling into that resistance. Swing trading. You're not waiting to find out if the resistance is there. That's too late. Once you wait to find out something about the market and look for that confirmation, it's too late. I didn't mean to make that sound loud or nasty, but it is too late. It's like when you want to trade a breakout and you're waiting to see proof on the time and sale screen. It's too late when you see it. You have to act rather than react in order to make money in the markets. But I think that's a different subject. That's not traders' tools, so we're not going to say too much about that. Going back again to, here we are again with the Fibonacci grid. Here we are with a continuation gap. But another little piece, I wanted to throw this in. One of my favorite little patterns in the market are these double triangles. I don't know how often you've seen double triangles. You don't see them too often. But when you see them, very, very high probability. They appear right within the middle of a rally. Very high probability when you see two triangles like this that you're going to get a move. I'm sorry, I don't want to trip on here. You're going to get a move out of that point about the same distance as the first move into the first triangle. It's one of those proportionality things. So, again, I can't throw that up there, but it's sort of okay, sort of close. High probability when that second triangle completes that you're going to get another vertical move of the same distance. Now, why does this work? It's a fifth wave, okay? It's a Fibonacci, price bars, gaps. There's a wave one, a wave two, a wave three, a wave four, a wave five. The fifth wave in any move is quite often the most dynamic wave, the most vertical. There's a certain proportionality in Elliott wave where two waves are usually the same distance, same length, not distance. But you don't need to go out and buy Elliott wave books to see it. What you need to do is crack open your stock charts tonight and look, because it's there. And I'd be glad if anybody wants to, you know, I've got my telecharts on there. You want to stick around, we look at some charts, but we'll find some after we're done. Indicators. You know, all the wonderful patterns in the world, unfortunately, we lie to ourselves. We're real good at lying to ourselves. We need truth serum. Now, if you're doing this for a while, one of the things that happens to you, you're doing it maybe 5 years or more, you know how the indicators are put together. You can look at the price bars and know what the indicators are going to say, because you have it. All they are mathematical derivations. If you understand the math behind it, you're going to know when an RSI is starting to roll over. You don't have to look at it. You're going to know, because all they are derivations of price. But if you don't have that background, you need the crutch of indicators. If you don't have a very stable personality, you need the crutch of indicators. Now, what does a stable personality mean? Does it mean you're bad people? No. I will hypothesize that not everybody in this room is trading the stock market to make money, or trading whatever market they're trading to make money. You're trading it for a lot of reasons that have nothing to do with money, and some of those reasons do the exact opposite of make money. I know that from looking in the mirror. I don't know from looking at you. I know from looking in the mirror. If I have a fight with my wife or kids, I trade one way. If I'm feeling particularly destructive, I trade one way. If everything's flowing, I trade a different way.